Do we have the noise in the ears?
Yeah, I have the noise. Zip, 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 zip. There's actually something showing up now.
Ooh, listen to that.
Is that any better?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I didn't even hear it. I heard like the start of it.
Weird.
Hi, I'm Jem from Australia. I have a lovely deep honey voice.
I noticed there's a new Australian voice in the script. I couldn't resist.
Yeah.
His name is Duncan.
Hey, Duncan.
Anyway, it's a good 8 minutes of recordings.
8 minutes of faff.
Get up on this mic.
You sound fine.
I can hear you.
It's false. As usual, you sound fine. Just fine, Justin.
Thank you. Thank you.
Get out of my ears. Well, hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Okay.
Feels like it's been 2 days since we talked, but yeah. That was just our weird schedule last week.
Yep. It's been not that many business days since we last talked. That's right. I'm glad we both got the color matching memo again. Seem to be matching every week at the moment.
How do we do that? I'm actually wearing navy, but yeah, we do wear the same. last few times we've worn the same color. Ooh, I'm getting echo. Uh-oh.
Getting echo.
What's happening?
What the fuck?
I can hear myself.
How?
I don't know.
How is that possible?
Sorry. Issues. Oh, I spilled coffee. It's going well. It's just like an entire episode of just weird screw-ups.
Yeah. I dropped my lens cleaner in the coffee too, so, you know, you're off to a great start.
That'll work great.
And now I've lost which window I've even got you open in. So, man, here's the problem with these bloody...
What's the deal with airplane food?
Yeah, it's not an app.
M computers. Oh, no, it's just these laptops. Like, you can just keep opening everything and running everything.
Oh, yeah.
Infinitely.
Right.
They don't seem to...
Yeah.
The performance doesn't degrade, and then... I had a meeting with Sarah the other day, and like I was like, "Oh, I'll just jump to this spreadsheet." And I'm like, "Sorry, it took me like a minute just to find which of the 16 desktops I had open. The spreadsheet was in." Right.
All this, my Mac Studio at the shop is just feels like it's endless power. Like the other day, it was kind of lagging, and I was like, "What the? Is the world ending? Like what is happening?" And it was like. One thing, I don't even know what that was. It went away though. So yeah, I got too many things open too.
You been happy with that thing?
Oh, it's been great. So good. Mm. Yeah. I have a 2021 M1 Pro Max Pro Max something laptop too. Just something redundant.
Yeah.
And it's definitely feeling it's, a you know, they're just different. One's way more capable. And I just haven't, I don't know. It's fine. I don't use it primarily.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I've been super happy with this, whatever it is, M2 or MacBook Pro.
Close this.
Yeah, it feels pretty unstoppable. Love it.
Right. I was watching an interview of one of, do you know MKBHD, the YouTuber, tech reviewer? He's got like a giant channel. One of his editors I'd never seen before was interviewed on another show, and she uses a... an M1 Max, like basically my laptop. I also have like the best Mac computers you can buy in that office. Like everything, every Mac you could ever want, endless budget. And she uses like the same laptop I have to edit their multi-million-dollar YouTube channel videos. And I was like, cool. It's wild.
I like it.
I'll take it.
I've been getting into DaVinci Resolve a little bit more. I haven't done a huge amount of editing lately.
Ooh.
But it is officially now my editor of choice for video. And I've forced myself to learn and map a few critical keyboard shortcuts, which I never bothered to do in Prem. The 2 decades or something I used Premiere. Is it your dog? What?
There's somebody at the door and she's barking out.
I didn't hear it at all. Hey, Hunter. Yeah, like the 2 decades I used Premiere, I never fully committed, so I never like taught myself shortcuts uselessly. So making the switch to DaVinci Resolve, I'm like, right, I'm going to start well. I'm going to actually map some good workflow. Yeah, and it's been really nice.
Right. How is it? I think the thing I'm most concerned about is I don't ever feel like I just have like, oh, let's have 2 hours to sit here and learn this new thing. I'm like sitting down to like, I need to edit this video now, you know? Like, has it felt like it's a big process to change to?
Not really.
Like you're slow and...
Not really, because I do such basic editing. Like, I'm using very limited tool palette.
I don't know about that.
No, but like, I'm not using... any of the few tools.
Filters and effects.
Yeah. It's just like, I'm just chopping footage together. And that's pretty much all I do. Like I found the auto captioning function in DaVinci yesterday, which is cool. Don't have to pay for an app to do auto captioning anymore. Right. I can just do it straight in DaVinci, which is rad. But yeah.
And it's funny you say that. That podcast, I forget her name, Mariah, I believe. Mariah was the editor for MKBHD that I was talking about.
Hmm.
And so another editor was interviewing her for a podcast. They both had YouTube channels. And they were talking about what software they use, because MKBHD is Marquez's like steadfast Final Cut Pro editor. Like, he probably started in his... when he was in middle school and he's still been using it with 8K footage and crazy red cameras and stuff. He talks about that. And then she is like, I don't like it really. You know, like it works for him and, you know, I know it, but you know, it seems that Premiere is the thing that teams seem to like to use. And she's just talking about like how you can get plugins and stuff for a lot of the plugins, and especially for audio, it's really, Final Cut Pro is really weak. But I've seen so much more about DaVinci lately that I'm surprised that hasn't become more of a thing. I suppose it's just new enough that it's not moved a lot of people's over yet, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sure there's heaps of people in the boat where they're like, well, that looks good, but I don't want to switch.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's free and very cheap if you pay for it too, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and the pro version's quite affordable.
Not in the profit first budget, though.
Well, I'm trying to get rid of my Adobe subscription, which isn't due until later in the year, but I'd love to be able to get rid of it, although I don't know that I've looked and I've failed to find a replacement for Lightroom that I like. Everything I've tried is real clunky, and I'm pretty addicted to Lightroom. So, you know, maybe I'll just end up with a single license of Lightroom and I can drop everything else, but...
Yeah, so that's US $10 a month for just Lightroom. Nice. So that's pretty good for Lightroom. Yeah. I don't know anything. Have you ever used Affinity software?
Yeah.
It's made by a company called Serif.
Yeah, I've had a look at it.
Before I dropped the dime for Adobe every month, I used it quite a bit when it first came out. And I've referred a handful of people that still use it. And it's great. It's like somehow it's a one-time payment of like, it used to be like $50. And I think I have two of them and I use them every once in a while, but they're fast and work great. Like there's really not much, they don't have like the cool new AI stuff, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've checked that out. I can't remember why that one didn't tick all my boxes, but yeah, we'll see. Don't know. By the time my Adobe subscription is due, you know, we might be in a better spot and I can justify it again. But right now, I'll work towards weaning myself off it if I can. Yeah.
So you pay annually for that?
I do. Yeah.
Usually?
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose is that like a weird version of like a better decision that, like, I pay monthly for it. I don't know. I never considered the annual payment for that, although I have a bunch of annual software. Is that like a leaner version that you can change more? I'm sure it's more costly.
Yeah, true. True. Yeah.
One piece flow subscription.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump straight to Software Corner.
What's new in Software Corner?
No, let's I've become very aware over the last week or so as things have been changing at Butter, and I'll talk about that in a bit more detail in a sec, but I've become, you know, as I've been trying to cut operating expenses and being pretty harsh with my subscriptions and cutting bits out, I've been like really questioning a lot of my software stack. And, you know, like little things like we pay for Quotient, you know, which is a fantastic tool that we got from you on your recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And been sending all of our quotes, custom quotes out with Quotient for, I don't know, probably close to 2 years now. And it's been awesome. But, you know, I don't use any of the other tools in it. Like I don't use the follow-up. I don't use it as a sort of quote management tool. It's just outputting, really.
Yeah, like same.
All of the note-taking and follow-ups and calculations all happens in Airtable. And I was just thinking about it the other day. I was like, why don't, you know, built this like real heavy, clunky beast in Airtable, which is really designed for multiple people to be using. But if moving forward, I'm going to be the only person sort of outputting quotes, like, right, why don't I just manage it all in a simpler tool that I'm already paying for anyway? And it's not that I can then, I don't see myself getting rid of Airtable anytime soon, but it's more about that just efficiency, like, of process, and like my time's going to be really limited moving forward.
Yeah.
Maybe it'd be more efficient for me to just use the basic functions of Quotient and just make it work. Don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. My quoting process has not changed a whole lot. We're doing so much less of that now.
Yeah.
It's mostly just create the quote, put the link and like the amount back into my Airtable RFQ record.
Yeah. That's cool.
So I have a record of where it's at, and then change the status of that RFQ and make some, we always put like any notes that need to go with that, everything lives. Cause we've used different systems over time with email software and stuff. And like when you stop paying for that, for example, I use Pipedrive for a while. It's a CRM email thing. And a bunch of data was in that. And so as soon as you stop using it, it just disappeared.
Yeah, good. That's a
so
good
now
point.
Everything stays in Airtable. It's the core. And it also is just like nice to have a place where if it's a project or a quote, you know, an RFQ of some sort, like the next person doesn't have to go searching for it somewhere.
Mm.
You know, especially, you know, you probably have enough experience too in like 3 years from now. If somebody comes back and they're like, hey, I want to remake that thing again. You're like, oh, shit. Like, where was the quote, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point. That's a good argument for maintaining the sort of the core consistency of Airtable. Because that feels like a...
I mean, you can simplify it.
Yeah, totally. Totally, you can. I just find, like, the way we're quoting now, we're not really using the sort of back-end complex calculations that we've built in our Airtable very much at all, like because Rhino,
right,
you know, my Rhino scripts are doing a lot of the pricing. So often I'm just like plugging lump sums into Airtable and then copying that into Quotient and off we go. Like there's not much calculation happening. So, anyway, lots of little decisions make around software stack incoming, but.
Right. Well, my biggest request, if the Quotient development team is listening to this podcast for some reason, I want to like create roll-up items so that like if I have, say, CNC machining as an object, like I have, we quote by, you know, you can put in a cost, you can put in a charge amount, you can put in a quantity. I want to like put three or four things inside that and then be able to hide it. It's like... just for me, as well as like I want formulas. I want just basically the basic functions of what a spreadsheet can do of like if this item changes to 6 quantity, then we need this much more machining time, this much more supply. Like there's just none of that.
That would be cool.
And that would be the ultimate, because otherwise it's like such a nice tool with the multiple choice, the optional stuff, the images and all the stuff. Works great.
Yeah, that would solve things for me too. That'd be nice to have. Yeah,
nice to haves. I triggered my Siri and it's been recording most of what I said. I didn't get that. Could you try again? Well, actually you did. You just didn't understand it. So I've been digging through. I'm still working through the book. I kind of paused at the point of Profit First where I need to do the review because my accounting was so backlogged. And I knew that if I went past it, I would kind of forget to do that part of the whole review. So I was like, I've been last couple days just absolutely heads down. Like I was here till like 9:30 PM just digging through, like, why isn't this account my credit card reconciler right with this other thing, and like cleared it all out and now it's perfectly reconciled. So it's like there's a bunch of that still to do, but I basically got all of last year cleared up. So I have really detailed numbers of revenue, which honestly is, and cost, and it looks good. It's still, I'm still in the same place of like, even though I was doing that, what did you call it the other day? The cost, was that where you like put a percentage by everything? Yeah. Line of in the income statement.
Yeah, I can never remember what that's called.
But whatever, yeah, that's called.
Whatever that's called.
I did that and I kind of rebuilt my income statement so it's like optimal, and I have it split out now by like products, costs in a bulk thing versus the job shop stuff, and then I can get profit margins of each of those things now, which is pretty cool. And then we have like operating expenses. And what's so interesting about all of it still is I still kind of had the same feeling of like, where did it go? Where did the money go? You know, like it's, you know, there's some stuff I'd like to change, but like I'm not changing my lease. Wages are always a big portion of it, but there's not a lot to change there either. So it's like going to look closer at subscription things, but it's also not a big percentage of our expenses. So material costs for products are a huge portion of the cost of products, but you know, that's something we can look at. It's 20% of the cost of goods sold. So
that's pretty good.
I can look into that.
But that's pretty good. 20%. I think my materials are 27% typically.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know, making progress, but I would like to keep reading through the book. I think my biggest movement so far is I've set up and picked a bank system called Mercury that it's kind of like one of these fintech companies that I have a friend that's actually kind of in the industry and gave me a confirmation it was the best of the options that were out there and seems pretty stable. And notably, after the Silicon Valley Bank failure, that changed the industry a bit, I guess. And they've all been doing different things with how they do insurance. So they're vastly increased their insurance, so it's a little less risky. But its main perk is that it will do automatic transfers, like we were talking about last time, where I have an income account and it automatically splits by percentage. It can be at different intervals, but I have it daily now into an owner account, but OPEX account, tax, and profit. And so that's been cool to see. It's like feels like it's working and it feels like it's gamified a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm at least interested in it at this point.
Yeah, I think the gamified bit is a great point. I think that's potentially got a lot of power there. I'm still not convinced by the sort of automaticness. I can see that being really useful long term. And, you know, early days haven't done any sort of distributions to the multiple accounts I've set up yet, but I plan to do the first one in a few days. But Laura gave me a hand to rebuild my sort of modeling spreadsheet the other night, and she's better at doing back end formulas in spreadsheets and like calculated, you know, if this then that, like tax rates properly, and just so it's pretty much the same as what I did, just a little bit more nuanced and a bit tighter on some of the details. And then, you know, so come distribution time, so you know, twice a month, I'm gonna try and do it twice a month, I'll plug in the revenue, the number that's in that income account, so you know, whatever it is, whatever's in that account then gets distributed. And I think for me,
that makes sense.
I see value in manually going, cool, how much is in there? How much should be in there for the period of time that's elapsed? That's 2 weeks. 2 weeks of sales should be this much money. Is it there or is it not?
Right.
And like, that's kind of a question mark point of like, cool, I'm at my distribution date and, you know, we're under or we're over or, you know, just having that sort of, that checkpoint, that clear sort of manual checkpoint of like, cool, there's not enough money in the account this period. Why is that? As opposed to sort of the automatic, just kind of magically happening in the background and then you're not sort of, maybe you're still going to realize, obviously, but like maybe you don't sort of twig that you're down until you go to pay your bills out of your OPEX account and there's not enough in there. And you're like, oh, what do I do about that? Which I'm sure will.
That's freaking me out. And at this point, it feels completely, barely even educated guesses of what, like my percentages are way different than what the suggestions are just because cash is low. I'm trying to like stabilize things and I have it split between two account systems right now, like the old one and the new one. Well, payroll's going through the old one still and I have to like wait till that happens to move the old money and just little stuff in the beginning. What's, you know, as we're talking, I was thinking there's a couple things that I've noticed that it has too. There's like pretty, and most banks can do this, but Mercury has like a, if this account falls below this level, notify me, you know, like,
yeah.
And I think that's probably where my saving grace of like the automatic stuff, like I'm still going to be looking, I look at it like a million times already. I know that's going to be the common thing is just come to look at it, but it's going to be, I'm still going to have to, hopefully at some point, I'm just not worrying about. I think that's where I want to get to personally is I've set up the percentages. I'll review it. I don't know what, every month, hopefully, and change them as needed. But I hope that I can get to a place where I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
The cash is not a problem anymore because it's the exact opposite where I have to worry about it too much. And I'm not saving the profit. I'm not paying myself enough. I'm not, you know, all those things. So, but I see, I know what you mean. I think it needs to be very front of mind still.
Yeah, I want it to be really conscious, certainly initially, so I can sort of tune it and understand it. And
right.
I think there is a good argument in the book for the sort of the manual twice a month distribution of sort of learning the flow of your business of like when bills are due and which, you know, I'm, you know, we're in a different spot still in terms of I've had other people paying my bills for a long time now. I'm about to be back in a spot where I'm doing all the finances myself again. So like I want that hands-on touch. I'm in a spot where like I'm hungry for that. I want to be have my finger in all the pies again. And yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of that? I'm sure you have. Like we pay most all of our things via credit card for rewards and also like the protection of that.
Cool.
And pay it off. We never have a balance.
Yeah, yeah.
But the one way you can like flip all of your subscriptions is to just change your credit card.
Yeah, I'm doing that.
Right. In that circumstance then. And then it's like, well, we'll see what doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, yeah. That's in progress. I've already created new, like what was really easy with the bank we're with. Just to spin up like 6 new accounts and attach cards to whichever ones I wanted and the numbers come through immediately. And yeah, so that's in progress.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm kind of speaking around. I'm talking a little bit around the goings on of the week, but basically as a result of all this sort of financial modeling and investigation I've been doing, and digging, we've downsized, and we've downsized pretty hard and quickly, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a massive and very emotional week. Yeah, we're basically going from a team of 9 to a team of 4 over the next little while, and it's not immediate. But by the end of this month, by the end of March, we'll be a team of four people, myself included. And yeah, it's kind of the end of a big chapter of Butter. You know, there's people who have been with us for 8 years plus who are exiting. And yeah, that feels pretty huge.
Right.
But, you know, there's in such a challenging week, I was just so blown away by, like, how incredibly, like, supportive and insightful and understanding every single person was. Like, I've had so many conversations with people this week, and it's just, like, every single one was just, like, had the same tone. Hmm. It was just incredible. Just, like, there was no defensiveness or aggravation or anything. Like, it's just, yeah, it's wild. So I think,
but probably the transparency that you've given through the open finances and stuff, that they're not, you know, there's no miscalculating that you're not just taking a windfall and wanting more or something, you know.
Yeah,
they know the reality.
Yeah, I think it's a big upvote for open book finances, for sure, of just keeping people in the loop. It's not to say that it wasn't a surprise. There are definitely some surprises in there, right. But I think just generally, you know, people had a pretty clear sense of where things were at and that something was going to have to give. So, yeah, big change, but, you know, optimistic about what's to come. Like, it's going to be really interesting. My time's going to be real crunchy in terms of what's now or will be back on my plate. And I'm going to have to get really efficient with a whole bunch of things and just, like, get real tight on how I use my time. So, yeah.
I told you offline. I knew it was coming. We had talked quite a bit about it. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I know some of those people and I feel terrible for them. I know you do too, and it's just part of the reality, unfortunately. And one of the worst parts about owning a business is when you have to make these decisions. And I mean, you get the quote-unquote windfall when you make more money, or you can disperse it right to different people, but you also have to do the hard thing of, like, when it's not going the right way, you have to move quickly and get rid of what makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, keep things lean if you need to. And, you know, I'll say it, I guess, publicly, I definitely applaud the speed and just having done it right away once you realized this isn't going to work. I'm sure it took a long time mentally, but, like, yeah, it's critical. Otherwise, you just keep going into a bad spiral, right? And nobody wants that.
Yeah. Yeah. We had to act pretty quickly, unfortunately, just to ensure that we weren't sliding past a point of no return, like, which I think, I'm really glad I had COVID for that week and was kind of forced to take a analytical deep dive, because I think, yeah, the timing became quite critical off the back of that, of, like, oh, yeah, like, if we sit on this decision too long, we won't be able to make the decision, so let's go ahead and do it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Might be too early to analyze, I suppose, but, you know, in terms of things to learn, I suppose, is there anything you've immediately come to light of, like, I mean, I've done my own versions of this. It's just not involved having to change them, you know, staff necessarily, but yeah. What are your first takeaways, I guess, of, like, what you'd like to have done differently, or, you know, now, or any of that?
In terms of what I can share here, I think top sort of broad takeaways are, don't sit on what you know deep down is probably coming or what needs to happen. You know, I've had a sense of this for some time, but I haven't sort of acted on it, you know, and a lot of the ingredients or decisions that have led to this point, I've had a intuitive or gut sense of not being quite right, but, you know, having sort of the courage to act on things earlier, I think it's probably a big takeaway. Trust your gut. Know your numbers. Know your numbers. Your gut can only get you so far with financial stuff. And I think, you know, intuition is both good and bad in terms of it works against you as well, of like what we did for a long time of like, no, well, it's okay. Well, this month was tricky, but we'll get there next month, you know?
You almost kind of like, it feels like you have to do that to some degree.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, if you're changing something, if you're pushing towards something, and we've talked about for so long, like the product part of business is there's so much more lag between I have an idea for a product or even a version of a product to when the right person walks by and wants to buy it digitally. And the same can be said, I suppose, for spinning up a service business, but it's like the service thing for me is just like today we could get a five digit job and I'd have no idea it's coming, right? Like, and that doesn't usually happen with products necessarily. Like, we don't just get giant orders. So it's definitely easy to, I don't know, need to invest, I guess, in that, you know, invest in the time needed to get the products growing or like get the marketing right or
Totally.
So it's in defense of it, we have the same. We have, like I've been talking about, December was just bad and I don't know why. Just wasn't good.
Yeah. And I've got some probably more off-air takeaways I can share as well.
Is that spicy? I can't wait to hear.
Sure.
But yeah.
Yes. Let's get exciting a little bit. You have a product idea.
Did I write product ideas? I don't remember.
I wrote product ideas.
You did.
And question mark.
And I put something in there. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'm working on a bed at the moment. I've wanted to do a new bed for ages, and I've got a great client who's very trusting and keen on the way we work. Well, we just did a big set of custom kit of parts for him recently, and now he's keen on a bed, and he's keen on the kit of parts bed that I've been sort of bouncing around the sketchbooks for a while but haven't resolved and managed to get kind of back into design mode a little bit this week after the turmoil and just get a little bit of work done because, you know, he's paid a deposit on a custom job for this bed and, you know, it's one of those jobs where I'm like, I've sort of structured it in such a way that it's product dev, but it's for a specific person, which I always find really useful because it makes me accountable for actually doing the project properly and getting it done, as opposed to a lot of my product development, which just stagnates for way too long. So yeah, I've been working on that. I was bouncing between Rhino and Fusion last night, trying to decide which I'd been sketching in both. And like, ended up for that sort of parametric product development, I ended up in Fusion, and that worked better for me. But yeah, that's coming, and a new bed has been a long time coming. We used to have one on our website that one of our old staff members, Ralph, designed 10 years ago or something, but it just became quite, with all the material, it was quite a material-heavy product, and like with all the price rises over the years, it just became kind of a cost-prohibitive object.
Beds are so interesting as a product. Have you... So you've shipped one before, right? Yeah.
Many. Yeah.
Right. I've never made them. I have a couple of friends, woodworkers, that make them. And when I first met them and found out what they did, I was like, you sell beds through Etsy. That's just, it just blew my mind that like people were paying good money for the bed and then good money to ship it. And I was like, and in these cases, these are not like flat pack. These are fully constructed in crates. It still kind of blows my mind that that's a thing, but you know, people need beds, I guess.
They're big objects. Even when they're flat pack, they're big objects. Yeah. But otherwise, product-wise, I'm just trying to... stop sabotaging myself in all the ways that I'm becoming aware that I do. Like, just trying to stay focused on the core offering right now, which is going to be critical to the next chapter of Butter. It's like, we have a great modular shelving system. Let's, like, get all the juice out of that system and, like, put product development energy into that. Continue to kind of grow it within the ecosystem we built, but not try and not get too distracted with all this sort of tangential stuff. Same as, like, my software thing. It's like, Jem, just bloody commit to one piece of software and use it. Don't overthink it. Just, like, get on with it. Make it work. So
yeah, I get that, though.
But yeah,
I mean, that's the plight of design for me. The flow, especially in the beginning, has to be there. Otherwise, I just get stuck and I don't continue on with designing something. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. You know, like, there's something wrong and doesn't let you move forward. Yeah, that's interesting. I think you've got so much you can do with the kit of parts that it would make sense to keep obviously going with that. It's kind of endless. Your DJ station that you were showing, I'm sure that's not going to be more than just a one-off, but there's a lot of ideas in it that are super cool. Like, I love the integrated cord runs and kind of routed into the back of the uprights. And obviously just anything custom fit is always super sexy to see.
Pleasing, isn't it? Yeah. It'd be hard to sort of productize that because everyone's got different gear. But yeah, definitely some little nuggets that we can take away and integrate. Like, I'd love to come up with a way of doing, you know, like, hollow dowels, for instance, for cable management. And, like, there's some fun ideas in that we could explore and potentially integrate into the main product range. But it's funny, like, anything with, like, DJ gear or vinyl gear in it just gets so much more attention on our social media than anything else. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it gets a lot of eyeballs.
I mean, you could, I suppose, if you're trying to do that, you could make the top places where those things go into, I don't know what those are called, mixers, vinyl spinners. What are those called? Turntables. The spinners. We're going to keep it at that. You could make those as, like, inserts themselves. And so you have, like, a drop-in. So you could, like, customize each by the custom piece of soft hardware.
Justin's like, I have this vinyl lathe. I would like it in my shelf, please. Where do I put my vinyl lathe?
It just scribes in instead of presses it. We had a question from a listener.
Cool.
I don't know how easy this will be to answer, but we're going to give it a go. Says, what's up, lads? Looks like I'm in a bit of a mischief at the moment. My boss is closing down shop, so I'll be out of work soon. I've got a bit of coin. I've been thinking about starting up a CNC machining business. Don't know, though. I feel like I'd be jumping off the deep end. If you lads could start again, how would you have done it? Any CNC machine recommendations available in Australia? Target audience, custom live, laugh, love signs. If you're willing to have a yarn, lay it on me. Well, obviously start with the live, laugh, love signs.
Yeah, obviously. It's good money in those.
Do your own spin of them, though.
I know a business, a successful high-end furniture business here in Australia that I will not name, that made a lot of money making those sorts of signs at the start of their business. And it definitely...
Live, laugh, love limited?
Definitely wasn't part of their brand story, and it was just a secret little thing that they used their machines for. Their first machine helped pay off their first machine and buy their next machine. So I think, there you go. Make those sides.
I had a friend on that same topic. This friend and I shared a shop for a long time, and we had this joke that we were going to start a business called Have To, and it was like only products that we knew would make a lot of money, but we were, like, either ethically or morally against, which largely was epoxy tables. Or, like, live, laugh, love signs. Things that, like personally, I, like, couldn't tie myself to because I'm just so against them. But if I had done it, we'd probably been worried about profit first. We'd be making a lot more money.
How would we have done it? Yeah, look, I think my tip in this sort of context to anyone who's thinking about this is to just keep it as lean as possible. Like, great, yeah, if you've got some cash to put towards a machine, awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, you can pick up a pretty solid second-hand machine. I guess what you have at the start of a business typically is you have time and not necessarily the cash. So if you can pick up a machine that maybe needs a little bit of work or it's basically functional, but you're going to have to sort of sink a bit of time into getting it set up and posting correctly from the right mm-hmm. software or whatever, I think, yeah, that's a great place to start. And, you know, I can only really speak to my own experience here in terms of I've always been pretty wary of people who jump in too hard and fast and like sink a whole bunch of cash into like multiple machines, have this sort of really clear sense right. of what their business model is straight off the bat. And, yep. you know, I'm sure that works for some people, but I'm sure it doesn't too in a lot of cases. Like I've always been sort of much more interested in, you know, starting small one tool at a time and just letting that one machine generate some revenue for you. And
the good news is that a CNC router is like six types of tool. Like,
yeah,
that's all I had for a long time. I had like a circular saw that the bearing was shot in.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do it right, you can use it as a surfacer, like a joiner, a planer,
yep.
a table saw. So it's a good start tool. If you don't overspend all your money on that, get something that's reliable enough for sure. But, I mean, I think I interrupted you there.
No. Carry. Yeah, like our first machine was like a hobby machine and it was real basic but it did, you know, 7 years of work or something. How many? Five? Yeah, quite a few. Seven. And, you know, generated money. Definitely paid for itself many times over.
Have you done the math ever, just mentally at least, on like how much value they create? Because like for the longest time, my God, the amount of money that flows through, we just had one router, right? And just, you know, you think about like your annual revenue and that was just vastly all we did was yep. just CNC routing. And it was like, not that we've ever made a ton of money, obviously, but it's just crazy. The cost of that machine versus yeah. what it outputs is wild.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential there. And, you know, sometimes it feels like everyone's got a three-axis router these days, but look, what we see flowing through our quote inquiries is like, for us, there's still quite a lot of demand for just straight CNC machining.
Right.
And if you've got the skills to kind of support people a little bit as well in terms of file prep and guiding them through good and bad design decisions so that they get decent parts at the end. And like, I think, yeah, there's still plenty of demand for that for sure.
I think my two bits on it, which worked well for me, kind of whether they were super forefront of my mind or not, was I bought a CNC router because I couldn't find anybody to make what seemingly at the time was complex parts, even though they were just 3D machined plywood parts. And so I basically knew from trying to find every possible shop in the area that wouldn't even quote my jobs that there really wasn't that. So it's changed a bit. That was 2016, 2017. There's more that do that, but just as an example, the two things that I saw that were easy to offer was, hey, we can do 3D machining for the router, which just seemed like there's very few offerings at that point. And then I made, through Airtable on our Squarespace website, an easy way for people to submit quotes. And then I responded to people right away and didn't drop the ball on giving them a quote, which is just shockingly simple, but also nobody does it.
But it's so common. Yeah.
Right. So it's just, you know, I always joke if we, you know, stick through and keep doing job shop work long term, the success is Or we make it easy to take a quote, send in an RFQ. We do what we say we're going to do and do it for a fair price and do a really good job of doing it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's very simple, but, you know, I'd say do the thing that you find any bit of advantage in that other people don't do right now. Or the other thought is, if your shop is closing down and it's not a super touchy thing, try and take some clients from it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Can you support any of that that's not going to be supported anymore?
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. Good starting point. Even just one client like can be enough to get things moving for you. So,
right. Often that's all you need in the beginning.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then pick up profit first from the start so you don't end up like these nincompoops.
Nice. All right.
Well, we got about a minute left.
Yeah. Better wrap up. Hey.
Before things get messy.
More messy.
More messy. We're cleaning up the messes.
Yeah. Jim's getting his audio in order. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully. We'll see. Still don't have buttons.
Maybe it'll work again like last time.
Maybe.
I mean, I got this one.
Hi, I'm Jim from Australia. I have a lovely deep honey voice.
Get out.
It seems to work fine.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Boy. Oh, daddy.